From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Corte Madera.
Pleasant Hill.
Inner Richmond in San Francisco.
Montclair in Oakland.
Coming up, how do African American men perceive one another?
I think that when you see racism and classism, but the faces are the same color, it creates a kind of dissonance that forces you to reconsider your notion of what race is.
We get a rare chance to listen in on conversations between black men, taking on tough questions.
How has your financial success or your educational success compromised who you feel that you are on the inside for what you feel that people want you to be?
And finding answers.
The more successful a black man becomes, the less the community seems to embrace it.
Honest dialogue through art. That's today on Cross Currents. Older generations often want to teach life lessons to those that follow. Mothers to daughters, fathers to sons, grandparents to grandchildren. Sometimes, though, those discussions break down and younger generations are left to fend for themselves.
There was all this euphoria around the 60s, and then we dropped the ball. And so we are living with the consequences now of having created that gap between historic moment in time and the lived experience of young African Americans now.
That's Chris Johnson. He's created a project that tries to bridge that gap. Question Bridge Black Males is a video art installation that features over 150 black men from 11 American cities and towns. The men are of varying ages, classes, and sexual orientations. They take turns asking and then answering questions on big life topics like love, family, and violence, all within the context of being a black man in America today. The project wants to promote constructive dialogue between black men and the rest of the nation, but also to break down limiting stereotypes about black male identity, internalized ideas that these men themselves often struggle with. Today, we'll be exploring the exhibit with its creator, Chris Johnson, and hearing a number of exchanges throughout the show. We'll start with this one, where participants Tony Brown, Julian O'Connor, Alex Morgan, and Ronald Porter answer a question posed by Anthony Trochet.
Growing up, I've seen black people who have made it out, either financially or educationally, change who they are. And so my question is, how has your financial success or your educational success compromised who you feel that you are on the inside for what you feel that people want you to be?
I'd have to say the first answer is that I feel like I've compromised my membership in the black community. And it's not because I left the community or the community left me, but it's as if there's a zero-sum game, that the more successful a black man becomes, the less the community seems to embrace him. And it's also got a little bit to do with how that black man is defined by the non-black world. It's as if your success makes you other. An example of a conscious way that I did that is with a soul shake. I remember growing up in Dallas, Texas, and meeting my friends on the street. And you walk up to them and you give them a soul shake. I also remember the day that I stopped doing that on the courtyard in Harvard. I remember walking up to them instead of giving them a soul shake, giving them the corporate handshake. I remember walking through the hospital, the floors, and doing the same thing, being conscious that when I see my friends, I should just give them the corporate handshake. And you know, the disappointing thing was that one day, walking down the hall was a cardiothoracic surgeon who came up and soul shook me. The moral to the story is, don't try to be black, just be yourself. And by definition, you're black.
Imagine yourself being a knight and you're riding into battle. A knight has to put on his armor and a knight has to have his shield and sword. And for me, if you're going to go into a corporate environment, you can't go in a corporate environment the same way you would if you were going to your grandmother's house or if you were going to McDonald's or if you were just comfortable. There's a code and there's a shielding, a layer of protection that you need for all the harmful things that are going to be in all of those environments because they're equally treacherous. I just look at it as you have to be confident about who you are, know who you are, and just know that in certain environments, you have to dress a certain way. And the way that you speak It's just about how relaxed you feel in those environments.
And I must say, it has not changed me at all. What has changed is people's perception of who I am and what I'm about. And what's in the black community has created a dilemma, because we have the idea that for an individual who has succeeded is now not part of that community, but part of some other community that we believe we're not a part of.
On one hand, the reality is that when we get into these positions of power, we make people uncomfortable. So that's one thing on the one hand. On the other hand, in all different types of professions, there are certain things that you have to do in order to be successful. There are certain ways that you have to be. But there's a difference between adapting to different situations and being in a hostile environment because you are black. So I haven't changed who I am. I've gained new skills. I can adapt to many different situations, but I am still me. I am still me at the end of the day. And I'm not afraid to be that.
There's a thing in this world called maturity. It's something that's kind of undervalued in the black community today, because people seem to be centered around this idea of what I call ghetto-centricity. That is, the ghetto is the center of all black expression, which is a very recent phenomenon. And a very divisive one. Because the truth is, everyone evolves. No one stays the way they were when they were 18, 19, 20. If they did, they wouldn't be human. I don't know what they would be. As black people, as black men, we need to be in the process of evolution. It cannot be about, there's no ultimate blackness. There's no ultimate black street credibility. There's who you are then, what works for you at that moment, and then who you become next, and who you become next, and who you become next. You take everything that you've ever had, ever happened to you, and you keep adding on top of it. And that's life.
Those were the voices of Tony Brown, Julian O'Connor, Alex Morgan, and Ronald Porter answering a question posed by Anthony Trochet. It's part of the exhibit Question Bridge, Black Males, which is showing at the New Exploratorium through April 2014. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. The man behind Question Bridge Black Males is Chris Johnson, a professor of photography at the California College of the Arts, who also makes art for the Oakland Museum of California. He says he started the exhibit in 1996 with the intention of opening a window into the complex and often unspoken dialogue among black men. He wanted to create an intimate, genuine experience for viewers and subjects while providing new opportunities to understand each other and heal.
Well, the initial idea goes back to an experience I had when I was 15 years old growing up in Bed-Stuy in Brooklyn in the 50s, when I saw the black community divide radically. As soon as the fair housing laws passed in the mid-60s and it was possible for African Americans who had the means and the ambition to leave the hood, they did. And I saw that happen. And so you fast forward many years, and I was invited to do an installation project at the Museum of Photographic Arts in San Diego to coincide with the Republican Convention in 1996. And they wanted me to do something that related to video. And so I created this thing called Question Bridge as a way to get African Americans whose lives are focused on the hood, their values, their culture and language, to somehow communicate with African Americans who made the choice to live in the mainstream world. And I knew that if you brought them together in a room, that wouldn't be a safe place for either of them to be free and speak. And so I just videotaped people from each side of that big cultural divide asking a question of the other. So just one person in front of a camera asking a question. And it might be a question from the hood, for example, like, why do you talk like a white person? Just that question. So then I take that question in video form to someone who lives in the suburbs, press play, and get them to respond, well, I talk like a white person because that's the way industry expects me to talk.
That's a black person in the suburbs.
Yeah, I only do question bridges within demographics, not between them. Because I think that when you see racism and classism displayed, but the faces are the same color, it creates a kind of dissonance that forces you to reconsider your notion of what race is. And so, of course, what I do is I also record questions on the other side. So the question coming from the suburbs might be, have you given any thought to where race is, to where the money for welfare comes from, and do you even care? And so I play that question for a welfare mom, and she has a very articulate, passionate answer, because people in those situations are always rehearsing the answer to these questions. So all Question Bridge does is give people who have this content of questions and answers a chance to share them with each other. Because the notion is that both parts of this whole, nominally called the Black community, have something important to share with the other. It's just that there's no viable mechanism for a sharing of those insights. And that's what Question Bridge is, and that's how it came to be.
What is it about the Black male experience that made you pick Black males?
Well, being a Black male, I thought that was a place to start. I mean, artists begin with their lived experience. That's the currency. That's the resource that we have to draw on. And so it made sense for us to take our lived experiences. But I think culturally what's important is that Black males are arguably the most opaque demographic. And people think they understand what Black males believe and feel. That's why racial profiling, and that's why Black-on-Black violence is so prevalent, because people are not dealing with human beings, they're dealing with images. And so it seemed like a powerful way to start. And if this process, this methodology of question bridging, was going to work anywhere, if it worked between Black males and each other, then there's a chance for it to work for any demographic. And that's what we're attempting to do, to take the question bridge process and bring that to any demographic that is divided from itself, and create a vehicle for those within the demographic to share wisdom across those barriers, but also people outside to get insight into what's going on in the consciousnesses of each one of those people that they see. One example that stands out really powerfully is we went to prisons, because a lot of Black men, of course, get caught up in that system. And we said, do you have any questions you'd want to bring? And this very articulate young man said, I believe in post-traumatic slave syndrome, PTSS. And I want to know, when you wake up in the morning, do you see a house, fill in the blank, or a field, fill in the blank?
The N-word?
N-word, right. And so we took that question in that form with the expletive not edited out and presented it to people like Andrew Young and many other people. And it was really remarkable to see how Black men instantly understood that configuration. It comes from Malcolm X, of course, and the notion that you could either find a place for yourself in the house, meaning that belonging to the system and trying to work subversively from inside the system, or work in the field among the people on the ground. I mean, it was, you would think some people reacted kind of reactively to the word. I'm no kind of N-word. But others really took that as an opportunity to claim a place for themselves in this constellation of different possibilities that are offered Black men.
That's Chris Johnson, artist and the producer behind the video art installation Question Bridge Black Males, in which African-American men ask tough questions about life and others answer them. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. We'll be back with Chris Johnson in a bit, but now let's hear another piece from the exhibit. In this one, civil rights era participants answer a question about activism posed by young New York hip-hop artist Robert Edwards. Responding are former Black Panther and Chicago detective David Lemieux, Ambassador Andrew Young in Atlanta, and Reverend Herbert Oliver in New York.
Why didn't y'all leave us the blueprint? Peace.
I suppose some of us, myself included, feel like we did leave a blueprint. If you had experienced the euphoria that we felt during the 60s, when we would see one another on the corner, and it wasn't no such thing as you had to throw up some kind of gang sign. When you saw other Black people, you went like this, they went like that, everything was fine. That's not the way it is now. I thought, me as an individual, because I can't speak to other people, I thought there would be a continuum. I thought if I raised my children a certain way, that things would stay that way. I thought that we were progressing. I underestimated the seriousness of our enemies. I underestimated them, that so much time and effort would be spent in dismantling those things that brought about self-esteem, those things that brought about self-love, those things that brought about respect for one another. A great deal of time and energy was spent dismantling that by our enemies. And it is our fault that we did not see that for what it was and combat it more thoroughly.
I think maybe we did leave you a blueprint. And yet, we too were so busy trying to survive that we were not as organized and disciplined as maybe we should have been. But speaking from the platform of Martin Luther King's civil rights movement, Martin Luther King never had more than 100 people on his staff, and that was only for one or two movements. He never had more than $500,000 a year to try to change the world. None of us had a blueprint. But what he taught us to do and what we learned from Gandhi in India was that we could find our own way by standing up for the truth.
Well, after the civil rights movement of the 60s proved to be very, very successful, I think blacks felt that we have crossed the threshold and it's easy going from here on in. But the worst was yet to come. I kind of think we thought that the waves would continue to roll, and we did drop the ball, only to find out later that other people were making plans and were putting certain kinds of Negroes and heads of organizations and paying them well. And they became the spokespersons for black people. And they became the protectors of the plantation, being paid by white people.
I think that we left you the blueprint. We just didn't tell you where it was. It's there. But we didn't just show it to you or lay it out. You had to look at us and see what we were doing to find out how to go about that blueprint. You see, some things can't be explained to you. Some things you got to look at a person, and then you got to see what it is that they're doing. The blueprint is you get an education. You don't just be in the middle of the road. You don't try to be with the kids who don't do well. You try to be the best, okay? You do as good as you can, no matter how angry people become, when you're really good. You know what? Success is not easy. It is not. If it was, everybody would be successful. It takes time. It takes hard work. And thus, everybody is not geared for hard work. Some people want it overnight, and it's not going to happen that way. And so what you have to do is, we old people, we've laid the groundwork for you. We've already put the blueprint out there. Now, you might not like that blueprint. You might want to alter it in some way. And you can. But if you alter it and it's not for the better, you will not achieve what us old folks have achieved.
Those were the voices of former Black Panther and Chicago detective David Lemieux, Ambassador Andrew Young in Atlanta, and Reverend Herbert Oliver in New York, all civil rights era activists answering a question by a young hip-hop artist, Robert Edwards, who asked why the older generation of Black men didn't leave a blueprint to follow. What questions would you ask your peers? If you're a Black man, what do you want to talk about? Send us your thoughts on Twitter or Facebook at KALW. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Now let's go back to my conversation with professor and artist Chris Johnson, creator of the video art installation Question Bridge Black Males. Did any of the answers surprise you?
We were constantly surprised. Like, for example, it wasn't possible to predict that a man would say, in response to the question, do you feel free? That, yeah, I feel free in some cases, but not free in other cases. That I don't know whether anyone can be free, frankly. I mean, that was one of the answers that just went to the heart of the sort of universal human experience that black men, of course, share.
You have this project, this excellent project. You have a dialogue going on, essentially, mm-hmm. between people who've never met each other. But it's still, you know, among black males. I want to ask if you're going to have a black female question bridge and whether you will, you know, kind of go beyond that and do, you know, white question bridge or Latino question bridge, you know, or cross-cultural question bridge. But first, I want an answer to the woman, the black woman question bridge.
Not surprisingly.
We have a lot of issues to discuss.
Sure. Well, not surprisingly, we get that question all the time. I mean, it's one of the things that is really inspiring to us as the makers of this project, because what it suggests is that the title, question bridge, colon, black males, people are paying attention to the colon and making it clear that this is a process that really could be followed by any demographic. But there's a deeper question to that, and has to do with whether or not it's even possible for me as a black man to do question bridge black woman. Because one thing that we learned is that, as I said earlier, creating a safe space for this process of questioning and answering to happen is really essential to the dynamic working. We discovered right away that we could not have the presence of a woman in the room when any of the black men were asking or answering questions, because it changes the possibilities of thought to be in a different context. The same question in a different setting is a different question. And so what we hope is that people recognize that there is something to this methodology that can cross boundaries and that they replicate it. One of the things that we've done is we've created a curriculum, and one of the modules of the curriculum that educators can go to our website and download is a replication model, so that a black woman could take this methodology and apply it in a setting that allows black women to communicate with each other. Because, again, any demographic that has nominally that belongs to each other has divisions that could be bridged in this way. And so we're hoping that it spreads. And we're building a website that hopes to embrace all of the different possibilities, all the different iterations of the question bridge in one place.
You're facilitating all this learning going back and forth. What did you learn from this experience?
Well, one of the things I learned, which is so obvious when you look back on it, is that there's no way to generalize about what a black man is, that the range of different life experiences that black men bring to the process totally breaks down any monolithic notion of what it means to be a black man.
Did you have some of those notions yourself?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I discovered was that there was a creative place for me to be within the black community, because I live my life as a teacher at a great private art school that's primarily white. And so to have an opportunity to be embedded for years in this intimate way with black men and black boys has really been transformative to me on a personal level. That's a whole nother story.
That's Chris Johnson, creator of the video art installation Question Bridge Black Males. The exhibit is showing at the New Exploratorium at Pier 15 through April of 2014. You can also explore it online at questionbridge.com. And if you go to the exhibit, we'd like to hear your thoughts and reactions. Comment on this story online at kalw.org. That's all for today's edition of Cross Currents. The team includes Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Alyssa Kapnick, Christina Loring, Liz Pfeffer, Mary Reese, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, RJ Sloan, and Eva Sonsin. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City Car Share, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. They're online at citycarshare.org. And thank you. We are listener-supported radio. Tune in to Cross Currents tomorrow at 5 as we explore new paths to citizenship in the proposed immigration reform bill.
Porque a mí, yo si a mí me dan papeles, claro que sí voy a ir a limpiar baños.
He says if he gets papers, he'll clean bathrooms. Why not? He says he'll go wherever they'll give him work and pay him fairly.
That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. You're listening to the Pacific Boy Choir. Their motto is Bay Area-based, world-renowned. Their next performance will be Box Magnificat when they join the Oakland East Bay Symphony, their final performance of the season. It takes place at Oakland's Paramount Theater on Friday. There's a pre-concert talk at 7, then the concert starts at 8. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.